when I gave the word. Now in the morning I sleep alone. Sweep the streets I used to own.
At Nick Rural DX Connected Health Summit here in San Diego, I'm with John Madison, who is the Chief Medical Informatics Officer and Assistant Medical Director of Kaiser Permanente SoCal. Health Innovation Media here. Happy that you stopped by, John. Lots of good stuff happening here. Tell me about it.
Thanks. The thing that I am fascinated by is how easy it is to get distracted with the technology these days, because it is so profoundly disruptive and exciting, and there's lots of bright and shiny objects. I think how we apply it to healthcare really matters, and what matters is, what is our end goal? Is our end goal to count more steps? Is our end goal to have a better blood sugar? Or is our end goal to live longer, healthier, happier lives? And I think there's a lot of false mystery that emerges out of a technologic view of health. If you look at the fantastic literature around blue zones, where various locations around the world have been shown to have longer populations with longer, healthier lives, not because they have more doctors and hospitals and drugs that they take, but if you actually look at the research that Buettner and others have done about what makes people live longer, happier, healthier lives with more mindfulness and resilience, there's a couple of common things. Eating local healthy foods, and particularly beans, but basically local, fresh, and healthy. Getting regular sleep, regular exercise, and paying attention to the health of your social interactions and your social network. Really experiencing the sense of community, the sense of connectedness, empathy between the members of your community, and caring about each other. Those are the things that lead to long, healthy lives. With or without digital technology, with or without the support of a healthcare system. And so there are attempts right now. Esther Dyson and the author of the book Blue Zones are independently working on projects to bring that perspective back. And so I like to think of how we use modern technology to really restore some of these ancient wisdoms around health, longevity, mindfulness, and resilience. And I do believe there's a powerful role for technology to play. And one of the things that I like to suggest to people is, rather than check their pedometer, Fitbit, Apple Watch, whatever, five times a day to see how many more steps they take, lengthen the time over which they don't look at the number of steps they've taken, and try and meet their goals. And over time, whether you extend it to 2 days or a week or a month, people will find that they're developing mindfulness, and they will actually begin living healthier lives by being mindful and subconscious about doing what's healthy, just like the blues of people who live in blue zones already do. I just returned from a...
I was just about to jump in and say, hey, I hope you talk about what you talked about on your speech. You just gave a nice, really nice presentation. There was a lot of energy around what you're about to tell us. So I'm just going to lead you into this. Say, hey, there's this awesome study and results that you found from the Netherlands. So here we go.
Well, the study was an observational study. And I've been there before, but I was just recently there to co-chair the eHealth work group of the Global Alliance for Genomics and Health. And what's fascinating is, in the Netherlands, everybody rides a bike. There are bicycles everywhere. And they live very, very healthy lives.
Reminds me of another place.
Right.
Where we ride bikes.
Exactly. And so there is a culture and an ethos of daily exercise there. And you see very, very few people who are overweight who are native to the Netherlands. They have a saying that they refer to American tourists as fat and stingy. And in downtown Amsterdam or Leiden or wherever you are, it's uncannily easy to differentiate a native from an American tourist just by looking at body mass index. Now, nothing's universal, nothing's 100%, but it highlights the fact that what we've known about blue zones is a universal truth, and that through living healthy lifestyles, we can in fact achieve much higher levels of health. and the current epidemics of lifestyle, disorders of lifestyle that are leading to the epidemics of obesity and diabetes and heart disease and stroke and Alzheimer's and dementia, there's actually a very good scientific literature showing that it is our lifestyle choices around eating, sleeping, exercise, and maintaining our social relationships that contributes to the disorders of obesity and diabetes. And it doesn't require a new drug, a blockbuster drug.
So just your vacation in the Netherlands, I notice this often when traveling. You know, it's amazing that Americans will not walk. They will not bike. They're taking a taxi. And all of the wonderful stuff you could see on the way.
Destination, right.
So many great things to see in Amsterdam or Rome or Paris, wherever you are. I mean, don't take a taxi, walk, ride a bike.
Exactly. And I think that's a good metaphor for the life journey of health and longevity. It's the micro decisions that we make every single day that contribute to health and wellness. I think B.J. Fogg at Stanford is a scientist, student of behavioral change and using technology, and his whole construct of persuasive technologies is founded on the notion that it is those micro decisions that we make daily that contribute to health, not whether we go to the gym three times a week on a routine schedule or whether we take three pills at night and five vitamins in the morning. It's about how we manage every decision, being mindful of what it takes to reach those attributes of the blue zones that have longer health and longevity than the typical community around the world. So it really is, riding a bike versus taking a cab is a great metaphor for the journey, not the destination. And the journey is around health and longevity and a life well lived. And they all do come together. So one of the things that I like to think about, in addition to using technology to help do three things. One, initiate healthy behaviors, motivate the sustained healthy behaviors, and then calibrate them. And in the terms of a pedometer, Fitbit, whatever, to lengthen the period over which people don't look so that they begin to use the technology to create mindfulness, not a digital nanny. What we don't need is more digital nannies. We need tools to help us live healthier lifestyles through unconscious, healthier decisions. So looking at the technologies that can support it, there's another critical perspective, and that is, how do we create better health for whole communities? And if you look at the evidence basis that we've adopted in healthcare and through evidence-based medicine, we now have a much better understanding of what works and what doesn't work because we pay much more attention to the details of objective data. And I think there's an entire paradigm that we need to move to around how to create health for a whole community. So in the past, still to this day, most foundations and non-governmental organizations and governmental agencies, they sort of have a charter and a set of tools. And when you have a hammer, everything can look like a nail. We need to be able to look at all the different tools that are out there from all the different organizations and institutions, but we need to be able to apply them in an ensemble and in a sequence that makes sense for each community. And so I like to think of the term a behavioral symphony of wellness where we bring the right ensemble and sequence of tools to a community that matches the needs of that community. So taking the paradigm of evidence-based medicine and applying it to community-based health is, I think, the pathway that we're going to really discover how to systematically create a self-sustaining community. So these NGOs don't come in and do their thing and leave, but they come in an ensemble and in a sequence that helps motivate communities to create the self-sustaining resilience. And the way I like to think about it is, we need to have survey tools that say, okay, what are the critical problems in this community? We need to then validate it with community leaders in an evidence-based way. We need to understand what their appetite is. Do they want to tackle teenage pregnancy, or do they want to tackle the drug problem, or do they want to tackle truancy at school? What is their top priority? Because if they're not interested in it, we're not going to make them become interested in it. So look at what the issues are, validate with them, understand what their appetite is, then look at the capacity. And when there's a gap in their capacity to address those issues, look in the toolkit of all the agencies and initiatives that are intended to help, and help them assemble an ensemble or an orchestra of these tools and sequence them to address those problems, with the end goal not being to fix the problems, but to create the resilience and sustainable mechanisms within each community. So if you apply an evidence-based approach to each one of those elements, I believe that we can create much healthier communities in a much more sustainable fashion.
That's awesome. I mean, that's so Esther Dyson, isn't it?
Esther is all over this, and I love what she's doing. Absolutely.
So tell me, John, what's happening at Kaiser in SoCal are you able to get this message out in the community here in SoCal?
We're doing it here in SoCal. We're doing it nationwide, wherever we have a presence in Kaiser Permanente. We are pushing walking with applications that stimulate people to embrace walking as a micro behavior on a daily basis in mindfulness. We support farmers markets around the country, and we analyze the community aspects of our membership and have just all kinds. We spend billions of dollars on community benefit, orchestrated by Ray Baxter, to really address these issues around the social determinants of health that have such a pervasive and profound impact on the health of entire communities. So our mantra is thrive, and the only way to thrive is to embrace the community health aspects of creating health for the whole community, not just our own members, but the communities where our members live in toto. And so we do community outreach at scale for all of the communities that we serve.
John, there's so much data. There's so much talk about big data and analytics and outcomes. The quantified self, the Internet of Things, it's all just this mishmash of stuff that's out here in the Twittersphere. And tell me, what is it?
So it's a lot of things. It is very confusing and complicated, but I think there's a way to think about it much more simply. And the way I like to think about it is supporting three conversations. But let me first set the table. So big data, in my view, is a mirror image of the Big Bang in astronomy, where at one point in time, all matter and energy was concentrated in a single point in space and time. And then after the Big Bang, there's been an accelerating dispersion of that matter and energy over the universe. So what's happening with big data is a perfect inverse of that, and that is that all data and knowledge is converging at an accelerating rate into a point in space and time. And so we are beginning to understand things that we previously didn't have access to because of the liquidity of data and the aggregation of data across many different domains, whether it's the genome or the so-called digital phenome, which is your health history, or the exposome, which is all the data from your wearable sensors and the Internet of Things. So when you converge all of that, we begin to get a richer, larger picture of what it is to have the human experience from all of its facets, health, social health, behavioral health, and to be able to have a much better understanding about the human condition. The quantified self is really focused on all the data about you. And what we really need to do is to bring a mashup of everything we know about you with everything that we know about the human condition to see where there are opportunities to improve your health and your longevity, and most importantly, your happiness and your resilience and your mindfulness to be sustainable. And so I see that there are three conversations that we really need to support in order to take the mashup of the big data and the little data, the quantified self and the big data knowledge base, and apply it to each individual. And the example I like to use is a 45-year-old woman is under a lot of stress, and she comes in and to be seen, and she's found to have high blood pressure and diabetes. And so her healthcare delivery team says, look, there's three things you can do. There's three options. Here's what we know from big data about diabetes and hypertension and your whole health situation. Here's what we know about you. And there's three options that emerge, and put them in very accessible human terms, in terms of how much benefit, how much risk, and how much effort that you have to put into it. So let's say for the circumstance of this 45-year-old woman, option A, you really need to change your lifestyle radically. You need to exercise daily. You need to get much better sleep patterns. You need to eat much more healthy food, and you need to change your social situation because you're around, you know, too much toxicity in your social world. You need to be much more deliberate about how you address that and how you live a more empathic life and a healthier social environment. And there's a medication for your blood pressure and a medication for your diabetes. Option C is where you just take a couple of pills and you don't have to change your lifestyle. And option B is somewhere in between. And this woman says, well, you know, part of the reason I'm having this problem is I'm under a lot of stress and my daughter's getting married in 3 months and all the arrangements for that. So I want option C, where I can just control my blood pressure, my diabetes for now. But as soon as my daughter's married and all my relatives leave town, I want to go for broke. I want option A, and I want to do everything. And then from those simple value-based options that are very accessible to anyone, we can drill down into all of the data that comes from the big data supporting the science, all of the data about her that supports her condition, how we do the mashup with the algorithms that are based upon medical evidence. And so someone with an eighth grade education could just choose A, B, or C. Someone who's a professor of physiology can drill down to extreme levels of detail and look at everything about their options to their heart's content with the data. So the three conversations that when you do this that we need to support. The first is the conversation between that woman as a patient and her care delivery team. That woman and her social network that supports her in her decisions and those conversations, and that patient and the whole person that patient persona resides within as one facet of that life. And the example I like to give is that how many times have you had an elderly relative who goes to the doctor and you say, you know, Aunt Jo or Mom or whatever, what did the doctor say? I don't know, I was so nervous, there was so much information. One of the things that some folks at Harvard, Tom DeBanco and Jan Walker, have initiated is a project called Open Notes, where the instant that the doctor signs the note from a conversation with you, it goes to the medical record and it's immediately accessible to you. So when you come home in the comfort of your home and in the comfort of your personal social network that's supportive of you, you can actually have access to the same information that every doctor and every other care provider has in your electronic health record. And Blue Button has contributed mightily towards this end. But I believe that those are the three conversations: patient, professional, patient, personal social network, and patient, person that houses that patient persona. And I believe that the same construct of the mashup of big data and little data with a drill down will be able to support all three of those at various levels of health literacy, cultural literacy, and so forth. And so if you look at what personalized medicine is all about, it's really about applying big data to your personal data in a way that's comprehensible and resonant with your own cultural values, your own personal values, your own family values, and that reflects the whole person.
It has to be about me.
It has to be about each individual.
Yeah. Outstanding. I say thrive on, John.
When I gave